Introducing Ellie Weber, 9:05, a little late, on the last day of the season before our Pesach break, as we give the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, pre-Pesach topic.
If people could share so that other people could have sheep, maybe.
Okay,
whatever.
You'll get more here.
Oh, you have more?
Okay. More sheep.
Gentlemen?
Impossible to tell how many people are going to come. So, okay. A theme we've definitely talked about before, but if it's the last one before Pesach, Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim seems like a pretty good topic to talk about. So let's do an exercise, which we may have done before. We haven't. Maybe I just thought of it, but it's a really good idea. And that is, everybody has to write their own Haggadah. Right, everybody's running a Seder, and they tell you, listen, you know, you have to decide based on your guests how to tell the story, what verses to use in telling the story. Where do we look? If we had to start, if somebody said to you, you know, write a Haggadah, where would you look in Chumash for the Psukim to tell the story?
Shmos.
Right, the answer is say for Shmos. You know, you might start at, let's say, the burning bush. Seems like a good story. And then it comes to Paro. You know, it's interesting that the text that we use, the center text that we use for the Haggadah, which doesn't really play a central role, sadly, in most of our Seders, because it comes at the end of Magid. And by then, you know, the desire for matzah is just overwhelming. And, you know, we've used up all of our Divrei Torah on Manish Tana. So we blow through the most important part, which is? Okay, which is Arami Ovidami. Okay? That really is the center part of Magid. And it really is the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. However, it doesn't come from Sefer Shmos. Where does it come from? It comes from Sefer Dvarim, but more importantly, what is it? It's what you say when you come to the Beit HaMikdash. And in fact, let's start from the last source. Okay, let's read it together. Okay, you come to the Beit, the background is as follows. You have harvested, you know, it's payday, let's say, right? You know, it's bonus day on Wall Street. You just got, everything just worked out. And now you go to the Beit HaMikdash, instead of like going to the car dealership, which in fact is the thing that happens. You know, you go with your bonus and you go buy a Maserati or something. Right? Instead of going to the car dealership to get a luxury car, you go to the Beit HaMikdash. And you say, you bring your crops, you bring your new fruit, and you say as follows, Va'anita va'amarta, you answer and you say, Lifnei Hashem Elokecha, Arami Oved Avi. Let's take a sec on that. Arami Oved Avi. In the Haggadah, what does Arami Oved Avi mean?
My father was a wandering Aramean.
Wrong. In the Haggadah, what does Arami Oved Avi mean? That Lavan, the Aramean, right, sought to destroy our forefather. Now, it's Mr. Levy is right in the Psukim, and he's right in the Ibn Ezra, and he's right in the Rashbam, who both say, it's interesting, one says it's Avram Avinu, my forefather was a wandering Aramean, which seems right in terms of picking, you know, who your forefather is. The problem is, why wouldn't Avram be the Pshat in the Pasuk? Because the next word says, Vayered Mitzrayim. Now, Avram did go down to Mitzrayim, but it seems like a stretch to claim that that's really where the Golos Mitzrayim started. That's why the other Pshat is Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, our forefather, and in fact, it makes sense to call Yaakov Avinu our forefather, even though he's third. Joke being skipped now about four. No. Oh, I didn't even make the joke. Oh, it's horrible. No. We are B'nai Yisrael. So to a certain extent, you know, it's not unfair to look at him as the person. Okay, so Lavan Avinu tried to wipe out, Lavan, the wandering Aramean, tried to wipe us out. Now, I wasn't going to do this, but I wasn't going to like do Pesach stuff, but I can't avoid it. Under what theory, Lavan is worse than Paro? Lavan, if you had to pick the top 10 villains in, say, for Bracious, Lovun maybe makes the list because you're lacking, you know, other... He's the least of the villains. Okay, he cheated. What shot? So when I was in kindergarten... The Torah Academy for Girls, okay? They told me the pshat, which most people say, and I think there's certain truth to it, right? That, what?
I'm impressed you remember from kindergarten.
Who doesn't remember? It's that I don't remember from last week. Kindergarten, I remember clearly. Also, if you went to the Torah Academy for Girls, you would have fond memories of kindergarten. Anyway,
before the
you...
Yes, what was the,
so they say as follows. What was it that got us to go down to Mitzrayim? It was the fight between Yosef and his brother. But if Yosef had been born first, if Yaakov had married Rachel, Yosef would have been the firstborn, maybe. In the Torah Academy for Girls, this is okay to say. Right? So there wouldn't have been any jealousy because the Bechor would have been his. So they never would have gone to Mitzrayim because the brothers never would have sold him. Okay, you know, it's a nice idea.
Why they send to the girls' school?
It's a nice idea. I was exceptionally good looking. Okay. Now, the real... But interestingly, Yaakov, you know, Love on B.K. Shlakar Sakol Rav Salvechik says something much better. Not just much better, but I think it's really true. He says, Lovun was the first anti-Semite. Now, what does it mean that he's an anti-Semite? What's the definition of an anti-Semite?
Somebody hates Jews just a little bit more than he needs to.
No, no, but it's a good line. In fact, this morning, if you want to read in today's Times, it's a good explanation for why anti-Zionism is an anti-Semitism. And in there, you could tell what anti-Semitism is, even though it's written by a woman who's Jewish, who did not go to Torah Academy for Girls, where she would have gotten a proper upbringing. But as follows, Lovun chases Yaakov, and he says to him, Yesh la'el yadi la'asotim achem. Remember, Yaakovina runs away with the whole family, right? And Lovun comes and says, I would do something terrible to you. Meaning, I would wipe you out. Habanos b'nosai v'abani b'nai b'atzon t'oni v'chol asher l'cha lihu. Right? But what are you going to do? Ve'loke avichem emesh amar elai, he shomer l'cha pen t'adamrem Yaakov mitov adonai. He says, I would wipe you out. But God appeared to me last night in a dream, and said to me, don't touch Yaakov and his family. Lovun would have killed his own daughters and his own grandchildren. Right? The Rav says anti-Semitism means when it's against your own interests. Okay? You could hate Jews for all reasons and, you know, it is or it isn't. He says the definition of anti-Semitism is when it's against your own interests. Right? In Egypt, it was at some point, it was against their own interests. In Nazi Germany, at some point, they sacrificed the war effort for their hatred. So they're up. That's anti-Semitism. Lovun B.K. Shlakas Hagol, he's the first anti-Semite, meaning he was the first person in recorded history to work against his own interests because he hated Yaakov Avinu so much. Okay? So that's why he's Zocha. Fine. We go down by Yagashem Imsei Ma'ad, we're very few, Vahisham L'Goy Gadol Sumbarav, and there we become a great nation. The Egyptians are mean to us. Again, I wasn't going to do this, but a great vart from the Rav. I can't resist. The language is wrong. It should have said, the Egyptians were bad to us. Okay? What's Mitzrim? He said, they made us into the bad ones. It wasn't just that they were bad to us, but they claim that we deserved it, right? Hava nidchak malo pen yirbev haya kisikrenem milchamav nosaf kamuel fonim nilcham bonu v'lo min haaretz. Paro says, we got to do something because the Jews are plotting against us. Because if there's a war, they'll join with our enemies, they'll leave, they'll kick us out, whatever the pshat is. He said, it wasn't just that they were mean to the Jews. He says, anti-Semitism is always that it's the Jews' fault. Literally, the Egyptians made us into the bad ones, right? We were undermining the economy. We were taking more than our fair share. All of this as a justification for, okay, I wasn't going to do it, but I couldn't resist. Fine. Vayiknu aleinu avodah kasha. Pasuk zayin. Vanitzak al Hashem elokei avoteinu. We call out to God. Vayishma Hashem al koleinu. Vayarat aleinu bet amaleinu bet achaseinu. He hears our cries. Great pasuk, Vayotzienu Hashem Mitzrayim Biyad Chazakah. We are right, happy ending. Morah Gadol Botot Motim. He takes out great miracles. Vayivienu El Hamakom Hazeh. God brings us to this place. Vayitzen Lano Et Haaretz Hazot Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. So, why we would choose these psukim, it's pretty obvious. It's a good summary. You take five psukim, you know, it starts in the beginning, it has the bad stuff, and then it has the good stuff, and it lands, and it ends in the land of Israel. Okay? So the simple answer for why Parshas HaBikurim, Arami Ovidavi, is the centerpiece of the Haggadah, is simply that you don't have to skip any psukim. You could take this group of psukim, and it has kind of the story from beginning to end. Okay, that's in terms of psukim. But if I asked you, let's take 2 minutes on this, if I asked you, if you were writing your own Haggadah, okay, where would you start the story? You have a decision to make, right? People are sitting at your Seder, they don't know anything. Where do you start the story?
Isn't that a Rav and Shmuel question?
Come on. But I don't want to Rav and Shmuel.
Abraham's conversation with God that the Jews were going to go down to...
Brit Bein Abitarim. You're saying I start all the way back at Brit Bein Abitarim. Anybody else? Wait, that's pretty early. What's the latest you could start? The latest you could start,
when
I suppose, is
when
they're enslaved. But
Moshe being told to go down to...
Right, I think you have to start with the slavery. You can't. The burning bush is too late to start. That's the burning bush is kind of the beginning of the Geula. But in terms of the slavery, right, you could have, you know, again, let's say you want to start with there in Egypt. So any reader, you're writing a book, so any reader says, wait, how did we get to Egypt? So you go, okay, there was this thing with Yosef and his brothers. So you go, okay, well, how did that happen? So you go, maybe you have to tell the story of Lavan and Rachel and, you know, how did Yaakov get, why was he living in with Lavan? Well, he stole the brachos from Esau. So, but why? It's hard. Right, I'm just saying it's not an easy thing to pick the starting point for the story of Mitzrayim. And if that's hard, so is the end point. Right? What are the possible end points?
Leaving slavery.
Right, one is the 15th of Nisan. You know, you're on your way out, the music is playing, we're leaving Egypt. That's certainly a great place. But what? Wait, but what? But you're stuck. You know, you're just in the desert. Right? See, and also it skips. I remember as a kid, watching the Ten Commandments and thinking, this is the end of the movie.
Yeah.
They're leaving, you know, you could see them all going into the desert, this great music, you know, this is the end of the movie.
But it continues to the
end. Of course, it continues because it's not fair to skip Kriyat Yamsuf. Okay? But then, Kriyat Yamsuf, that definitely seems like the end. Right? But then the movie actually continues. Right?
So
Maimad Har Sinai. And I'm actually saying the movie, if you're telling the story, is that really the end? And then fine, Maimad Har Sinai is a spiritual high point. But we're still in the desert.
Yeah.
Right? You don't really want to do the Egel, but, you know, you don't want to do the Meraglim, right? But don't you want to get in? Right? Isn't the end? And even then, one second, getting in, okay, I got into the land of Israel, that seems like the end. But don't you want like a Beis HaMikdash? Right, which is another 400, you know. It's not so simple. Okay, it's not so simple.
Circumcisions at the crossing the Jordan.
That is not a high point of the story. In the movie, they skipped it.
They skipped it, but in our,
good,
from
good,
our perspective, they became Jews.
I agree. So each time, and I think when you're a storyteller, you know, the question is how much before and how much after? And every great book, every novel certainly has this, even history books. You have to pick a starting point. You have to pick an end point. That is, of course, maybe the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel in the Gemara, yes?
I think the Prince of Egypt, that cartoon, does a good job of better than the movie.
I'm less familiar, but I know that Motzei the first day, the family is watching the Prince of Egypt to
it was animated,
to
sounds much more educated.
So we know. Okay, now, where's the mitzvah? Let's start with something else. Look in source number one. Okay? The Torah says as follows. Matzot ye'achel eight shivat hayamim. You have to eat matzah for 7 days. V'lo yer lecha chametz, v'lo yer lecha so'ar b'chol gulam. You can't have any chametz. Why? Or what's connected to that? And here's the mitzvah. V'hi gadetol levincha b'yomahu le'mor. You have to tell your child on that day, saying, v'avur zeh aso Hashem li b'tzeitim mitzrayim. Because of this, God took me out of Egypt. That's also part of that Haggadah. Because of this, meaning Pesach, Matzah, and Moror. Okay, because of this, God took me out of Mitzrayim. There's one other Pasuk Yudalid. V'haya ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor mazos. When your children ask you at a future date, what's up with all this? V'amartai love. That God took us out with a strong outstretched arm from Egypt where we were slaves. That is the source for a mitzvah sase min haTorah called Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yes, Mr. Weiser.
That's not my question. It's a statement. Matzah Yorocha Eshivat Yom.
Yeah.
How come the thing, because it's in one sentence.
Yeah.
Matzah.
Good.
You don't have to have matzah.
Correct. So we've discussed before.
But how is that? How is it possible?
So there's a different drasha. One part of the pasuk is exactly as you say. The connection between matzah and chametz is exactly as you say. They're flip sides of each other. The din is, the only things that matzah can be made out of are things that could be chametz, and the only things that could be chametz are things that matzah could be made out of. The idea that you don't have a mitzvah sase min haTorah to eat matzah 7 days, we've discussed before the other Gemara.
No, that's what I have.
Good.
Still a friend, this
good.
Question.
Okay.
All my life I was thinking about this.
But it's easy, Mr. Weiser. You eat matzah 7 days.
Just like chometz.
It doesn't say it's usher. So you know what? You eat matzah 7 days. You have my blessing. It's fine. Okay. Please, I don't mean to brag. I eat matzah all 7 days. Mostly because I'm hungry. And because I don't eat kidney meals. But it's a good thing to do. Nobody thinks you shouldn't eat matzah for 7 days. Now the Rambam. Okay? The Rambam source number 2 says as follows. This is the mitzvah. 157. V'amitzvah kuf nun zayin hishet tzivanu l'saper b'yitziat Mitzrayim b'leil chamisha asar b'nisan. We are told l'saper b'yitziat Mitzrayim. We've already spent a few minutes talking about what we think the parameters of that would look like. On the 15th at night, b'tchilat halayla. But that's important. B'tchilat halayla, the beginning of the night. Probably this relates to the fact that the Rambam thinks the mitzvah might expire at chatzot, possibly. It's not 100% clear. And the Rambam says, "Kefit sachot l'shon ha-misaper." That's very important. According to the skill level, I suppose, of the teller. Okay? Two things here. One is the Rambam clearly imagined or understood that one person is kind of telling the story over, or one person is leading the Seder, which in fact, more or less, halacha l'maisa, we think is supposed to be true. So for example, when you get, let's say, to Hallel, the back part of Hallel, it's really the case that somebody, one person is supposed to say, Hodol Hashem ki tov kilom chazda, and all the other people answer, Hodol, like as if there's a chazan of your Seder. Okay? But I would assume that the Rambam also means, kefit sachot lashon ha-misaper, and your audience. Right? A Seder has to be appropriate for the audience. Now, what does it mean the Rambam says kefit sachot lashon ha-misaper? Doesn't the Rambam have a Haggadah? It's clear that the Rambam thinks the Haggadah is the basis for it, but it doesn't limit you at your Seder. Otherwise the Rambam would just say, just read the Haggadah. The Rambam thinks it's important for people to expand and to give details and to discuss Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, not just based on the Haggadah, but okay, we say the Haggadah because we've been saying, because my great-grandfather said it and his great-grandfather said it and so on and so forth, and so I'm going to say every word in the Haggadah. But I think it's clear in the Rambam that it has to be tailored to the audience, and the explanation has to be tailored to the audience, and I assume that if you went to the Seder of the Gadol Hador, but his grandchildren were sitting there, you know, he's not darshaning, you know, in some Reb Chaim on the Ron Karma Pesach. He's telling the story, because otherwise you're doing it inappropriately.
So if you tell a story, do you have to read the Haggadah?
So I think you do. I think the Jewish people have accepted upon themselves. I can tell you this. We keep the minhag of reading the Haggadah on Shabbos Haggadol. Okay? You could read the Haggadah in 12 minutes. Less. It's not the reading that does us in. Okay? It's all the discussion around. You know, the Haggadah Shel Pesach, if you took out all the commentaries and everything, it's a few pages. That's not the problem. If if it was me and people were bored, so I would read fast certain things to move it more quickly. In my gut, I wouldn't want to have to make a decision on what to skip and what not to skip. Now, interestingly, in America, I never ever heard a discussion of what's critical to say at the Seder and what's not. In Israel, because of the army, these things are discussed all the time. If you're on duty and you only have time to say, you know, there are all these discussions. And you can find, Rav Rimon has, Rav Asher Weiss also has, you know, what needs to be said, what's more important, what's less important. But for us, you know, don't sing Dayenu. Right, that's the most important part of the Seder. Except the Rambam doesn't have that in his Haggadah, by the way. Okay, back inside of the Rambam. V'chol, now listen to this, second line. V'chol ma sheyosif b'ma'amar, anything that you add, v'ya'arich ha'dvarim, or you expand, b'hagdalat ma she'asa lanu Hashem, in making greater that which God did for us, u'ma she'asu imanu ha'mitzrim, and also that which the Egyptians did. This is very important. And it has to do with also the art of storytelling. You go, why do we want to focus on the bad part? The answer is the joy that you have, sorry for doing this, at the end of the movie, you know, is related to how nervous you are, how sad you are, how terrible it was at the beginning. All stories are like that. So the Rambam says, it's not just details of the great part, that which God did for us, it's also details of the terrible part. Now you'll say, is it the terrible part that God did for us? That's a scary philosophic question, right? Which I don't really feel comfortable dealing with now. But that's buried in this Rambam. Okay? Ve'ech lakach Hashem nikmatam mehem, how God took revenge on them, uvehodot lo, yitbarach al mashek malon mechasadav, yihyeh yoter tov. Says the Rambam another thing that's important. The sibui you see in Shem is not just fact-based. It's not just, okay, this is what happened, and then God saved us. A critical element is our genuine thanksgiving towards God. That's part of Sipri Yetzias Chaim. It's said in halakhic terms, it means that Hallel at the Seder is also part of Sipri Yetzias Chaim. You have not fulfilled your obligation to tell the story unless... See, there's two ways to tell the story. You can tell it dispassionately, as if it happened to somebody else, and so kind of intellectually you would convey the information. What you see from the Rambam is that's not the right way to do it. It has to be told personally, it has to be felt personally, such that by the end of the story, you are genuinely grateful. It's not just giving over information. The goal of the story, the Rambam would say, is so that at the end, you feel genuinely grateful to God, as if He literally took you out of Mitzrayim. B'chol dor v'dor, Chayav Adam lirot et asmo ki'ilu hu yasa mimitzrayim. How could it be that in every generation you see yourself as if you left Egypt when you didn't? Okay, so there are some people who went through things in their lives. Mr. Weiser. You know, people who went through things in their lives where I don't think it's difficult to imagine, you know, that you were lost and then God saved you. For me, who, you know, the most difficult time I had was surviving Torah Academy for Girls, you know, wasn't that hard. You have to work, yeah, it's really an effort. So it's easier, I'll tell you this, it's easier for me in Egypt, in Israel, you know, than it was in America. There really is, I have to say this, too many personal things this year, but so what? I always felt a little guilty at the Seder in America. It just seemed like, and God took us out, you know, and brought me to Teaneck, New Jersey, where there are 22 milchik restaurants that I could, you know, wow, that's why I was the purpose of the redemption.
You should get back Noah's Ark.
Huh? You should get back Noah's Ark. 22 milk, I'm not talking about fleishik. 22 milk, God forbid there should only be milk. Right? It's, you know, it's easier here. It really is much, much easier here, but the goal, says the Rambam, and it's really true, the goal, says the Rambam, is that it has to work towards making you feel genuinely grateful. And again, your relationship with gratitude has to do with how at risk you are, how much you suffered. You know, without that part of the story, without the terrible part, then the redemption just wouldn't be that redeeming. Right? Again, I don't feel, you know, I think people who lived through the war and then came to the land of Israel, I think there's a sense of redemption. Right? I think if you came from Tina, you don't really feel redeemed, you feel lucky. Yeah.
I mean, I always tell this joke, if it's to my wife.
You're interrupting to tell a joke?
If I tell my wife,
just to make it clear,
when
you want me to stop at 10 o'clock, to make it clear, you stole time to tell a joke.
If I throw my wife and my dog in the trunk of the car, I do that, and then an hour later, I open the trunk, who's going to thank me more, my wife or the dog? So,
how do we deal with that? God put us into Egypt. God put us into Egypt.
I don't think it's funny at all.
Well, the dog will lick
me. That's the first time I've ever agreed with Mr. Weiner.
The dog will lick my wife.
I made it clear. I made it clear that I wanted to, that.
But this point was raised about 10 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, but how do we deal with it?
What?
How do we deal with that?
Okay, so there's a lot of ways to deal with it. I'll deal with it in one way, and that is as follows. It could very well be that in order to be a nation, right, you need to have gone through something. Do it this way. There's obviously, you don't be a religious person, and this I think is true, you don't be a religious person to realize that the Jewish people are unique in history. Right? You could read the debate between Isaac Herzog and, is it Toynbee?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Who said that the Jews were a relic of history and they don't, you know, right? Fossil of history, thank you. And you could see, it doesn't matter, you know, who you are, right? There's simply no nation in the history of the world who were in exile for 2,000 years and came back to their land. There's nothing ordinary about the history of the Jewish people. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that we were formed, we're the only nation in the world that was formed outside of its historical boundaries. We were not, the nation of Israel was not formed in Israel. The magic of us is that we were formed in a foreign land. And there's no hiding it. It's not like, you know, Bruce or your dog figured out that God did this to us. At the Brisbane Upsarm, God said that this is the way it's going to be. And I think it had to be that way. You know, you could say it's not fair for God to do that. But it could be that there's no other way. We're human beings, right? It has to be the case that our national identity was based on our having been redeemed. It has to be that we were redeemed from God. Another Dvar Torah, which I wasn't going to do, but it's a really good one, right? The Haggadah says, V'ilu lo hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Esavuseinu Mimitzrayim, had God not taken us out of Egypt, Hare Anu Uvaneinu Uvenei Vaneinu Mishubadim Hayinu Lefaro Mimitzrayim. We would still remain slaves to Paro and Mitzrayim. And ask Morachani in the Torah Academy for Girls. Okay? That's ridiculous. There could have been an Abraham Lincoln, you know, the Egyptian parallel, Muhammad Lincoln, you know, who would have come along at some point and let us go. This is thousands of years later. There's no real slavery anymore. We would have gotten out, right? The answer is yes. But on the one hand, we would have been in debt to them, right? The fact that God redeemed us, made us God's people. God was kona us as a people. Now again, you'll say, couldn't there have been another way? Maybe the answer is no, there couldn't have been another way. For human beings, right, the way you become indebted to someone is because he saves you. And God saved us. Yes, you'll say, but if God, you know, God didn't have to put us there in the first place. But the answer is, we wouldn't have felt that way, right? Human relationships are based on that. The answer is, we're human beings. And I know that I have gratitude to people who saved me and people who helped me. Even if at the beginning this person could have done something, it doesn't matter. That's how human beings work, and that's how the nation of the Jews
works. We created a nation in slavery that would not have been created otherwise. Because you had 12 quarrelsome brothers, and each one would have gone his own way.
But then we wouldn't have been a nation.
We would have been no nation.
Correct. You know, Chazal talk about it, Kur HaMitzrayim, like the smelting pot of Egypt. We had to go through that. There's just something about suffering that builds unity. You just have to see in the modern state of Israel, right? When do we have unity government? When things are miserable. Otherwise, we're regular hate each other, right? But when things are miserable, that was true 2,000 years, 3,000 years ago, it remains true. Okay, now, very quickly, because we're going to run out of time. The question that everybody asks on the Rambam and on everybody else really is, what's so unique about Sifu Yetzias Mitzrayim? So you say, what do you mean? It's once a year. It's at the Seder. But there's another mitzvah that the Rambam counts, that everybody counts, which is, seems like almost identical to Sifu Yetzias Mitzrayim. Look at source number 3. Says the Rambam, you all know this, in Hilchos Kriya Shema. Says the Rambam, Afal pi she'ein mitzvah tzitzis noheges balayla. Even though the mitzvah of tzitzis doesn't apply at night, and the third parsha of Kriya Shema is all about tzitzis, nevertheless, says the Rambam, korin ota balayla, you still have to say the third parsha of tzitzis at night. Why? Mipnei sheyesh ba zikaron yitziat mitzrayim. Because there's something called Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim. Somebody translate that into English. What Zikaron Yitzias Mitzrayim as opposed to Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, I know. That's the story. What Zikaron?
Memory.
Okay.
Mentioning.
It's something like, whatever it is. Sipur is here. Zikaron is something below it. Okay? And now the Rambam says, Umitzvah lehazkir Yitzias Mitzrayim vayom uvalaylo. Says the Rambam, there is a mitzvah saseh min haTorah to recall the Exodus every morning and every night. Shenemar l'man tizkoret yom tzeitcha me'eretz Yisrael kol yimei chayecha. We are commanded to recall the day we left Egypt, all the days of our life. Right? And you know in the Haggadah there's a whole piece, right? Yimei chayecha hayamim. Kol yimei chayecha halelos. The whole discussion about whether there will be a mitzvah of zechirat Yitzias Mitzrayim in the days of the Mashiach. And then the Rambam just finishes by saying, Ukriyat shalosh parshiot elu al seder zeh, hi hanikret kriyat shma. These three parshas, the Rambam Shita, kriyat shma consists of all three parshas. Okay, so now the question is, wait, what's the difference between the daily mitzvah of zechirat Yitzias Mitzrayim, zachor et hayom, what's the first one? How's it go? The Rambam has sheish zechira. The Ramban has sheish zechiros. We say them every day. No, Shabbos is in. How does the Mitzrayim one go? Just one puzzle. No, you work it. You got to get the first one. Somebody take out a sitter, please. No, it's just one puzzle. No one has a sitter. Okay, leave it. Huh? Maybe we'll find the next Rambam. The Rambam says in Chometz Umatza Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph Mitzvat Aseh Shel Torah L'Saper B'Nisim V'Niflot She'Na'asu La'Avotenu. Sorry. L'Ma'an Tizkor Et Yom Tzeitcha Me'eretz Yisrael Kol Yimei Chayecha. Okay? Fine. Shame on all of us. Okay? Now, Mitzvat Aseh Shel Torah L'Saper B'Nisim V'Niflot is a mitzvah saseh min haTorah to tell over the Nisim v'Niflot, the miracle Shenasu la'avotenu b'Mitzrayim b'Leil Chamishasar. This is Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. The problem is, he says, Shenemar zochoret hayom hazeh asher yitzatem b'Mitzrayim. He says, Zechira, right? Not Sipur. Kimo Shenemar, even worse, zochoret yom haShabbat l'kadisho. Now, that's another one. That's another Zechira, where, by the way, the Ramban thinks there's a mitzvah every day to remember Shabbos. Now, there's no story of it. There's no Sipur Shabbos. This is just Zechira, remembering or recalling Shabbos. So the question is, and just to make it clear, then the Ramban says, "Uminayin shebalel chamishasar." How do you know that the mitzvah of Sipur is on the 15th? Tamud lomar vihigata talavin chavayom uleimor ba'avur zeh. Right? Zeh always means pointing in the Torah. Why, every time you see the word zed, there's always a limud why blind people might be potur, right? Ben soromar, they're supposed to take them to court and say, b'neinu zed soromar. So the Gemara says, ah, if they're blind, you can't have a ben soromar because you can't say zed. Okay, that's the same machlokas with respect to the Haggadah. So the answer is, you have to tell the story of Mitzrayim, of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim on the 15th. Now, so what is the difference between Zechira and Sipur? Okay, there is another Zechira that we do al peh, that's Amalek, right? Zechira Amalek is Pasha Zohar. So there's a lot to be said on this. I will just quote you, Rav Chaim, he's not the first to write it, but he said there are four distinct differences between Zechira and Sipur, or said another way, Sipur requires four elements that Zechira doesn't. One, he says, Derech She'ela U'tshuva. It has to be done via question and answering. The psukim say, your son will ask you, you'll answer as follows. So he says, one,
so
to be...
The
text of Manishtana probably is in Ma'akeh. There are tons of other questions, right? Chacha Ma'u Omer, Tam Ma'u Omer, there's a lot of places in it, but I think the thing is right. You have to generate questions and answers as part of your conversation. Okay, that's one. Second is we'll come to it in a minute if we have time. Matchil bignut u'mesayim b'shavach. It has to be a story. Every single story, right, has some tension in it, and then there's a redemption. Every good story, every best-selling story. Bad stories don't follow that formula. But it has to start with, Woody and Buzz are separated from the rest of the group, and they're never going to get back, and your kids are crying in the movie theater, and telling them, no, it's a Disney movie, it's going to be fine, I promise. Right? You need, that's the gnus, and Messiah B'Shvach, and then they get back together, and everything is great. That's point number two. Point number three, says Reb Chaim, that you need to be Yotze the Mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, is show and tell. You need props. You need Pesach, Matzah, and Mar. You need stuff on your table that you can point to that deepens the feeling, right? Everybody knows as children, a story that has props with it is more memorable. A story that has, again, not to go back to TAG, the acronym, but you had show and tell. You had to bring something and explain to the other girls, like, why this was significant in your life.
Show and tell.
Were you the only boy in that school?
He's so jealous. You could play with Barbies also. Fine. Okay. Last thing, says Reb Chaim, is that it's important to mention that this is the day on which it happened. That's a critical element. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim can only be done. It has to be your birthday. It has to be your anniversary. It has to be clear. And also, you understand why. If the goal is to feel it, so it's easy to feel it, A, if this is the day, it makes it more immediate. Two, if this is the matzah. Three, if the story was told with tension. Four, if you're so involved that you're asking questions and answers. Okay, those are critical elements. Since Reb Chaim, mentioned this, a lot of people have come and added different ideas. The most interesting one, Rav Usher Weiss said that it's critical for Sipur that God and Moshe be part of the story. If you tell the story as if, these makos happened and all these things happened, and you get all the facts right, but you don't say that it was done at God's bidding, via Moshe Rabbeinu, you miss the point. Okay? It has to be uniquely the case. Now, does that mean that Zechiyat Yetzias Mitzrayim doesn't have to be God-centered? I don't know. But he thinks that that's a critical element to Sipur. Okay?
So Moshe is not mentioned in that. God only wants to.
That's a very good point.
It's a quotation.
That's a very good point. You're absolutely right. That's another interesting thing. It could be that Moshe, it could be that the theme of the Haggadah is Ani v'lo Malach, Ani v'lo, right? Ani Hashem v'lo Acher, that everything was done by God. It's funny because in the Torah, God is less prominent. Like everything looks like it was done by Moshe Rabbeinu, and in the Haggadah, it's the opposite. Okay. That's an interesting topic in and of itself. It's clear that the Baal Haggadah, of course, it's clear that the person who put the Haggadah together left Moshe Rabbeinu out. Okay? It was not an oversight. Just like Mordechai and Esther wrote a Megillah, they left God out. Nobody thinks, they understand it was done intentionally.
I learned that it was a deliberate rebuke to the Christians at the time. That not one man.
Okay, they didn't teach that in TAG. But I can't say that you're wrong. Okay, now, let's go back to the point about storytelling. Now that we've laid this out, just very quickly, about the beginning and the end of the story. So look at source number 6. Okay, the Mishnah, well before there was a Haggadah, the discussion about who put the Haggadah together is an interesting discussion. The vast majority, the core parts of the Haggadah are taken straight out of Mishnayos. Right? Again, there really wasn't somebody who wrote the Haggadah. What there was somebody who took a bunch of pre-existing pieces and put them together. Okay? And it was obviously done after the time of the Amoraim. I think there was like a Haggadah of the Gaonim. Yeah. So it means sometime between 500 and 850. Maybe. Somebody put it together. But it wasn't as if they didn't have a Haggadah before then. It just wasn't a uniform text. It's much like, people daven before there was a Siddur. Right? At some point, you needed to unify the text. So the Mishnah says, Matchil bignutu misayim b'shavach, you start with the bad stuff, and you end with the good stuff. V'doresh me'arami oved avi, ad she'yigmor kol ha'parsha kula. And you darshan right? The parsha of Arami Oved Avi, as we read before, until you finish the Ad Sheigmor Kala Parsha Kula. So now, who wants to take a shot at this? What does the Mishnah mean? Matchil Bignutu Misayim Bishvach means what? We said already, you start with the bad stuff and you end with the good stuff. And now what? Vidoresh Me'amar Arami Oved Avi. Is that an additional, or is that what it is?
Well, it's the best stuff because Oved Arami could also.
So you're saying it might be what it is. So the question is, okay, so what's Maschil Begnusim Sayim Bishvach? So skip to number 7. Okay? The Gemara Psachim Kuf Tazayin Oman Aleph is as famous as it gets in terms of what we say in the Haggadah is as follows. Maschil Begnusim Sayim Bishvach, my Begnut, what is the bad part of the Mitzrayim story? Rav Omar. Mitchila Ovde Avoda Zora or Ovde Avodat Gilulim Hayu Avotenu Lushmuel Amar Avadim Hayinu Lefaro Mitzray. Right? As simple as it gets. Although nobody guessed Rav Shita. Shmuel Shita is easy. The story starts with Avadim Hayinu Lefaro Mitzrayim, and how does it end? Vayotzienu Hashem Misham Biyad Chazakov Zoran Tuya. Right? That's the focus. Nobody guessed Rav Shita of Mitchila Ovde Avodah. Right, when I asked you, where would we start the story? It doesn't sound like the story.
Neither one starts with Hiroki Ovde
Avodah. We'll get there. Excellent, we'll get there. But Rav's story is what? Rav's story is the spiritual story of the people of Israel. It's our relationship with God. Mitchila Ovde Avodah Zarah Avotenu, and in our Haggadah, Ovde Avodah Zarah Avotenu was like Terach, the father of Abraham. Originally we were idol worshippers, and then God brought us close to him. Okay? They're two completely different stories. They really are. Right? One is the story of the Exodus. The other is the bigger story of our relationship with God, although clearly then the question might be, why is that unique to Pesach? Right? If the question is Avodah Zarah, and now we have a close relationship to God, why is that unique to Pesach? Okay, how do we paskin? Lahalacha, how do we, this is the machlokes, how do we paskin?
We do both.
We do both. Okay, what do we do first?
Shmuel.
What do we do first? Forget the names. Avadim Hayinu is the first thing in the Haggadah. Then later we say Mitchila Ovde Avodah Zarah. So look at the Rambam. In source number 8, the Rambam Perek Zayin Halacha Dalet of Hilchos Chametz Tumatzis says as follows. V'tzarich la'atchil v'gnudul sayim b'shvach. You have to start with the bad stuff and end with the good stuff. Ketzad. How do you do it? Matchil u'misaper, you start and tell the story of what? Shebitchila hayu avoteinu b'nei terach u'milifanov kofrim v'toin achar ha'hevel v'rodfin achar avodah zarah. That originally, before Abraham Avinu, our forefathers were idol worshippers, and eventually u'misayein b'dat ha'emet, and it ends with the true religion, shekervanu ha'makom lo v'hivdilanu minatoim v'kervanu liyichudo, that in the end God brought us close to him and separated us from the other nations and made us his unique nation.
The word kofrim means that you're going to get something, but there was no revelation of Hashem.
Yeah, I don't know how much you get. It's a nice point. I think kofrim also just became like a generic term for people who don't believe in the one God. Okay, you know, yeah, they believe in, I don't know, some big frog. But they're kofer in the one real God. Okay? Then the Ram says, V'chein, additionally, matchil u'modia, you tell people, she'abadim ayinu l'faru v'mitzrayim, v'chal hara'a she'gimolanu, and all the bad stuff that happens out of Mitzrayim, u'mitzayim, and you finish, v'nisim v'niflot she'na'asu lanu u'v'cheiruteinu, in the great miracles that were done to us and in our freedom. Okay, v'hu she'yidrosh me'arami oved avi ad she'gmor kala parsha, V'chala mosifu marich b'drash parsha zo harei de meshubach. Okay, the problem is, so how does the Rambam paskin? Anybody? It's a little hard to answer. How does the Rambam paskin?
He does both.
He does both. Okay, what's first?
The bad.
The bad is first, but which bad is first? No. The Rambam says, right, the first line, Keita matchum esvesh shebitchila hayu avotenu b'mei terach kofrim. First is Avodah Zarah. Then, after that is Avadim Hayinu.
I just
Now, it makes complete sense, because it's chronological, it's historical, right? That happened well before, right? Let's be honest, nobody thought to start the story of Mitzrayim with Terach, the father of, no one thought of that. But that's what we have in the Rambam. Great. So if you ask me, I would say the Rambam thinks that the primary story is the spiritual story. We used to be idol worshippers, and now we're religious people. Also, you tell the story about Avadim Hayinu L'Farav Mitzrayim. The problem is, we have the Rambam's Haggadah. We didn't find it, he published it. Okay? His Haggadah looks suspiciously like our Haggadah, in which Avadim Hayinu comes first. It's not correct chronologically, and it doesn't seem to be correct according to the Rambam. So here you have something fascinating. A really, really interesting idea is the following. That Avadim Hayinu is not the Sifu Yetzias Mitzrayim. We really do paskin Mitzchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah is the main story. So what's Avadim Hayinu? Avadim Hayinu is the answer to the Manish Tana. According to this approach, the Manish Tana is really one question. And that is, make up your mind. On the one hand, we're eating matzah. On the one hand, we're eating maror. On the other hand, we're leaning, like we're free people. On the other hand, we're dipping twice, like we're free people. Which one is it? So the answer is, it's both. Avadim ayinu l'farav b'mitzrayim, we have that part. Vayotzeinu Hashem, then God took us out. Okay, that's all the introduction to the Haggadah. Then you get to the real Haggadah, which is Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu. And there's a great diuk in the Rambam. If you look, in the very beginning of the Rambam, the first line, he says, Ketzad Matchil U'Mitzaper. You tell the story of Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu. When he gets to Avadim Hayinu, he says, V'chein Matchil U'Modia. Not tell, but just let people know, meaning that's the answer. Okay, but the last thing I want to say, and the most important thing is, when we read the Mishnah, and Mr. Levy hinted at this, and all people saw it, isn't the simple reading of the Mishnah, if you go back to source number 6, isn't the simple reading of Matchil Begdutum Sein Bishvat, how do you do that? V'doresh me'arami ovei avi. Arami ovei avi is exactly what we needed, right? It begins with Gnus, Arami Ovei Avi, whatever that means, and it ends with Vayivieno la makom azeh vayiten lana ataras azos eretz zavat chalav udvash. That seems to be the simple pshat of the Mishnah. What's this machlokes with Rav and Shmuel, Avadim Hayinu, or Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, when the Mishnah, the simple reading of Mishnah is, the centerpiece of the Haggadah is Arami Ovei Avi, which happens to be Matchil Bignut, Umisayim B'Shevach. Answers Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, I believe it is, in the Melamed Lahoil. It's famous and it's genius. He says there are two different parts in our history. He said, you're exactly right. The Haggadah that they said when the Beis Hamikdash existed consisted of the Parsha of Arami Oved Avi. That's what they read. And they read, no one called me out on this, if you go to the last source, they read all the psukim, including pasuk tet, vayivienu al hamakom hazeh, vayitem lano et haaretz hazos, eretz zavat chalav udvash. But what? But then we went to Golos. We don't read that pasuk. It's not part of anybody's Haggadah. Okay? He suggests as follows. Arami Oved Avi stopped working for us once we went into exile, where the Haggadah was clearly written. Because we couldn't say, you know, imagine forgetting Lodge or Krakow, just saying it in Tinek. Vayivienu la makom azeh. What makom? Right? Somewhere along the line, we dropped that line. And so Rav and Shmuel says the Melamed Lahoil, Rav and Shmuel had to create a new Matchil Bignut U'Misayim B'Shvach, because the main darshaning of the Parshas HaBiturim of Arami Ovei Avi didn't work in Chutz La'aretz. Okay? But, and here's the interesting part, there are some old Haggadahs, there seems to be some support for the fact that they used to say the entire, you know, all five psukim, not just the four psukim that we say. And I'm not here to suggest that we reinstitute saying the last pasuk. However, I'll point out the following. One of the benefits of using Parshas HaBikurim as the centerpiece for Magid was that everybody knew it by heart, for the most part. You had to go to the Beis HaMikdash, you know, and you had to say it once a year, and it was an important ceremony. The betting is, much like we know Kriya Shema by heart, and we know Oz Yashir by heart, people knew Parshas HaBikurim by heart. Now, by making it the centerpiece of the Haggadah, everybody knew the last pasuk, but we didn't say it. Right? Imagine if one day I told you, you know, we're going to say the Parsha of Ahavta and Kriya Shema, okay, and we're going to stop there. Now you know what comes next. But I told you we're going to stop right before Uchtavtam. We're not going to say it. But in your head, you know the next pasuk. I think that we kept darshaning this because everybody knew the next pasuk, even though we didn't say it. You understand what I'm saying? We picked we didn't just pick Parshas HaBikurim because it's a concise story. We picked Parshas HaBikurim because when we say Parshas HaBikurim, Parshas HaBikurim was a form of a Seder in the sense that when you came to the Beis HaMikdash, you told over the story that had happened already, not as it happened, if we stole Psukim from Sefer Shmos, but the story that had happened already. Right? Parshas HaBikurim was a form of Hodah, was a form of thanksgiving to God, unrelated to Pesach. So we stole those Psukim to make them the centerpiece of the Haggadah, mostly because they really were the quintessential form of Matzchu B'Gnusim Sayim B'Shvat. Mitchila, I'm sorry, V'anisa V'amayt Kudei Hashem Lekecha Arami Oved Avi. Either way, but the simple pshat is Arami Oved Avi, either Avram Avinu or Yaakov Avinu, was a wandering Aramean, made his way down to Egypt, right? Terrible things happened in Egypt. God saved us, and what? Brought us here. Where's here? The Beit HaMikdash. So that we could bring Bikurim, so that we could be genuinely grateful to God. We didn't just steal it because it's a concise story. We stole it because it was used in the same form. It was a form of thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we use in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Now we go into Golos. It's not so good. So we stop saying the last pasuk. But we all know the truth. I think we've lost like the secret of the Seder, which is Arami Ovid Avi ends with being in Israel. Now, it's true that the Haggadah makes a conscious decision, among other things, to stop the story where? Kind of on the 15th, when we leave. Right? Now why? There's a whole bunch of reasons for that. Even there is no reference to Kriyas Yamsuf in the Haggadah. Now you'll say Dayenu. Again, the Rambam didn't have Dayenu in his Haggadah. It's a later addition. I'm not saying not to say it. But there's clearly a decision made in the Haggadah to stop the story. Okay? We probably say Kriyas Yamsuf for the seventh day of Pesach. Right? We probably say Maimad Har Sinai for 7 weeks later on Shavuos. Okay, so where's Yom HaTzmod? Where's the coming into the land of I don't know. You know, maybe that was going to be Sukkot. It's hard to know exactly. But the story is ended, and I think the story is ended, and maybe that's the support. Some people think that we never said the last pasuk. Even in Israel, we didn't say Vayivien Olam HaKom Hazeh because it violated the rule that the Haggadah is supposed to end in Egypt. But even then, the same idea applies. No, we didn't.
Yes, we did.
No,
why are we eating roasted?
It was the fourth. We didn't have a seva then. But that's unrelated. Why are we eating roasted? It's related to the Seder. I think, even according to that Shita, that they never said the last pasuk. It was chosen because people are supposed to know. It's true. The focus is on Mitzrayim. But I know the last pasuk, just like I know Chatam Amzot B'Tachu B'Sharacha, I know that the last pasuk is Vayivien Olam Makom HaZevi. I'm not saying it, but I know it to be true, right? I know when I read the Megillah that Hamelach sometimes applies, means God. It doesn't say it there. There are ideas behind which you're supposed to understand. And I think that, you know, this was always, whether it was the Pshat in the Mishnah or not, the way the Malam of the Hoyle says, I don't know. But I think it was clear that this was always supposed to be the centerpiece of the Haggadah. A, because it reminded us of a happy time when we brought Bikurim to the Beit HaMikdash. It reminded us of when we were genuinely thankful to God for all that He had given us. And it works both in Israel and in Chutz La'aretz. In Israel, it works either because Vayivinu L'Makom Hazeh is said and is truthful, or we don't say it because it violates the rule that the story has to end in Egypt, but we know the next pasuk is that. And in Chutz La'aretz, we don't say it because we can't say it, right? It would undermine the joy. And let's face it, it must have been hard sometimes to celebrate Pesach, you know, under difficult situations. But Jews did it. And I think knowledgeable Jews knew that the end of the story is supposed to be Vayivinu L'Makom Hazeh. So, I'll say this. Even if you don't say that, there are plenty of people now who are trying to push to sort of get the pasuk into the Haggadah. I think it's still, I think it's cooler that it's not it. I think it's much more exciting that you know what the next pasuk is. Yes, we made a decision, not because we weren't sufficiently Zionistic. We made a decision the story has to be limited, and, you know, we have to leave parts of the story for other holidays. But we know that ultimately, the real end of the story isn't the 15th, and the real end of the story isn't the 7th day of Pesach HaKriyah and Yom Tov, and the real end of the story isn't even 7 weeks later at Maamad Har Sinai, and the real end of the story isn't even 40 years later when we come into the land of Israel. The real end of the story is Vayivinu L'Makom Hazeh to the Beit HaMikdash, which combines both the physical geula of Avadim Hayinu and the spiritual of Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Avoteinu into one happy package. Chag Kashev Sameach to everybody.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.